Becker on Darren Adonik on this Thursday afternoon. Lot of you heard of the news last night. Some of you unfortunately had to wake up to the news, but sad news coming in East Tennessee. And look, if you've been here more than a minute, you basically have a John Ward story. And Willie and I talked about our John Ward stories earlier, but there's nobody that somebody that could tell the John Ward stories way better than us, and that is Vols voice Bob Kessling. He's on the line with us. Bob, how you doing? Thanks for doing this.
I'm doing great. Wasn't Willie Donick involved in a block charge game in a Vanderbilt, Tennessee game that Ward was not too pleased with?
Look,
that you got the call. Do you remember that?
Bob, this is the story Willie is trying to tell me and the listening audience, that when he started doing stuff for Vanderbilt shortly after his career, that John Ward claims that he remembers everything about Willie's career at Vanderbilt. That's the story he's trying to tell. I said, the problem is you didn't tell that he called you Bruce Elder and you didn't correct him.
How about that?
Bob, I'm sure there was more than one block charge game between Tennessee and Vanderbilt, but the one I remember my freshman year was at Thompson Bowling Arena. It was Wade Houston's first year and Eddie Fogler's first year at Vanderbilt. And we did the play where you set the screen along the baseline where you're taking the ball out of bounds, the length of the court. And you try to have the guy run into the guy setting the screen for the guy taking it out of bounds. And it worked really well. One of the Tennessee players bowled over our guy, and they didn't call it. They just sort of let it go. Our coach exploded. So I don't think that's the call you were thinking about. There was one with Phil Cox, right? A little bit before my time.
That was it.
That's the one everybody still talks about. Yeah, I don't think John was happy about that one.
He's never gotten over that. He never got over that. So anyway, that was it. It was Phil Cox. It wasn't you. I apologize. It put you in a bad light.
I would have loved to have been there. I'm getting compared to Phil Cox. He scored about 2,000 more points
than I did.
Yet
again, Willie's not correcting people on these examples. Hey, Bob.
I got you.
You know, we've been at this for a long time. You've been at it for a long time, and we all have people, especially early on in our career, right, that have affected us and shaped us and molded us, and we've taken things from observations and what have you. I'm going to turn things over to you because, what did John Ward mean to you and what you've been at it now for a long time?
Well, I would not be in the position I'm in now without John. I mean, my relationship started with him back when I was at UT, back when I was going to school. I had played football for a year and figured out that was not going to work, and so I found something else. But I was able to befriend the director of photography for UT, who also did all the coaches' shows, because he was coming out and filming some of the pitchers for the old Knoxville Sox baseball team, which I got a summer job out there. So he told me they needed a film editor on the Bill Battle show. And they said, didn't get paid much money. You couldn't go to the games. You had to sit and you had to cut the flash frames out of the film during the game. So then John Ward and Ernie would be able to come in after the game and start putting together the Bill Battle show. I said, that was fine. I think I was paid $15 a game. And I think John said I was overpaid for what I was doing. And so that's how I met him. And then, I got a job at a local radio station, WIBK. WIBK got the rights to the game. John needed a spotter. And so about 1977 or 78, I started spotting for him. And I did that until 1992. I sat next to him every single game, and I watched him work, and I was smart enough to keep my mouth shut and my eyes open, ears open, and listen and watched. And It was like if you were a painter sitting next to Picasso or something like that, just learning how to do it and how to carry yourself and how to treat people and all those type things. And John was a master at all of that. So he gave me opportunities. You know, he started letting me do pregame stuff and halftime stuff and postgame interviews and all those type things that really helped me grow as a broadcaster. And I had several opportunities to go to some small schools to do football play-by-play. But, you know, I thought I would learn more sitting next to John Ward than I would be out there in the wilderness thrashing around myself. And that was a smart decision. But he taught me basically everything I know about what I'm doing now, and I'm really indebted to him.
Mm. You're right about that. We've all been fortunate enough to be around a lot of legendary people, famous people, and certainly I've said over the years, sometimes be careful what you wish for. You don't really want to meet them. That's better that you just think of them from afar. Well, that certainly wasn't the case with John Ward. Anybody who had any interaction with him, he made you feel like, you know, you were special. He listened to you. He cared. And that was – he was just the opposite example. It would be a guy you absolutely want your kids or your family or people you were with, your friends, to have interaction with John Ward, because he would make you feel like, you know, he cared what you had to say.
You know, and he wasn't – although, you know, his style on the air – was very authoritative, and you knew, I mean, he's larger than life and all those type things. But when he wasn't on the air, he would be the guy standing in the corner. I mean, he didn't want to be in the spotlight. He wasn't the toast of the party. He wasn't the guy in the middle of the ring cracking jokes. I mean, he was kind of a shy guy, and he'd stay off to the side. One thing that I always admired about him, and at first people thought this was kind of egotistical, because a lot of times he'd have a briefcase or a satchel and he carried it around with him. And he had 8x10 pictures in it. I mean, who does that? Who carries around autographed pictures of themselves? But he did it because when little kids would come up to him or somebody wanted his autograph and maybe all they had was a napkin or a scrap of paper, he didn't want them to go away with, because they'll throw that away. They don't want to make it home. But if somebody really wanted an autograph that bad, he said, "Let me give you something that you can take home as a souvenir." And he'd pull out an 8x10, and he'd sign it for him. I don't know anybody else that ever does that, but John did it. And there's so many people today that are reflecting how John did that for him, and they still have those pictures in their rooms or at their office and all those type things. He was special that way. He was an advertising guy. That's where he made his money. He did the broadcasting as a hobby, basically, is what he said. But he was in advertising, so he knew how to market. He knew how to package stuff. He got his law degree, and he never practiced law, but it helped him with the command of the language, and it helped him organize, and it helped him think things through. And so when he go to do a broadcast, he had that marketing skill of packaging the game, but he also had that legal background where he's getting ready, like he was going in to be Perry Mason or something like that, you know, be a big time, like he was in trying a murder case or something like that. I mean, he was so prepared. He'd have a little clipboard, and he might have 30 or 40 typed written pages of notes, anecdotes, things about players and coaches, the series, all those type things, which I'm sure he memorized, but he had it in front of him. And he'd occasionally flip through it. He maybe used 30% of it. You know, Willie, you know, you got all that information when you're doing a hockey game. Maybe you use half of it, but you better have it in case you need it. And that's kind of the way John looked at it. You better know where the information is, because it might come up, and you better have done your research and done your homework.
It's so interesting you talk about those 8x10s, because I had a diehard Kentucky fan on my freshman hall. Had grown up in Versailles, Kentucky, right outside of Lexington, and he was all in on the Cats, but he loved John Ward, and he sent away for one of those pictures. He had it on his dorm room. It was the only thing that was not Kentucky blue in his room, I think. We had a hard enough time for him rooting for the Commodores, and he went to Vanderbilt. I used to give him a hard time, but I think that's an interesting thing, Bob, about John Ward, is anybody who listened to him, even if they weren't a Tennessee fan, you couldn't help but be entertained by his presentation of a game. So he transcended even the diehard Tennessee fans.
Yeah, he did. You know, and he wasn't – you knew he was rooting for Tennessee, but he wasn't an outright homer. You know, sometimes outright homers turn you off. And, oh, I don't want to listen to that guy. He's so pro-Tennessee, I can't stand – he wasn't like that. I mean, you knew he was rooting for Tennessee. But he really – especially basketball. He enjoyed calling basketball games. He enjoyed – there's nothing more that he enjoyed – better than a great basketball game. And yeah, he wanted Tennessee to win, but he just enjoyed the drama, setting the game up, all those type things. He just enjoyed, again, marketing and packaging the game. And the better the game was, the better John was.
Bob Kessling is with us. He's the current voice of the Vols, and he succeeded John Ward, who passed away, of course, last night. We're giving tribute to one of the legendary broadcasters in John Ward. And Bob, you've done such a tremendous job in following in his footsteps. But as you know, and any broadcaster knows, you could never imitate and do what he did. So you had to come up with your own style. But as you said, you learned so much from him. How did you try to take some of the things that he taught you, but not go on to go behind the microphone and try to recreate what he did? Because nobody could do that.
No, Willie, it's interesting you bring that up. It was 92, and I was getting ready to go leave the Vol Network and go to Jefferson Pilot. And John called me, and he tried to get me to up my pay from, I think he was paying me $100 a game to like $110 if I'd stay on and keep spotting for him. And I'd take the Jefferson Pilot gig. He was laughing. But he always called me Kiesling. He never called me by my real name. He always called me Kiesling. And so I got this call one time, and he'd go, Kiesling, Warped. He called himself Warped. John Warped. I said, John, how you doing? He said, congratulations on this Jefferson Pilot deal. He said, now listen. He said, don't do all this phony hocus-pocus crap that I do when I'm doing the broadcast, all those stupid phrases and stuff I use. We don't need another John Ward. We need a new Bob Kessling. And they hung up. But he was right. That's what he said. Don't try and be me. Go out and do the broadcast the way you need to do it. And I was so blessed because long about that time, Lindsey Nelson was still around. And so I got to work, with John Ward and got to know Lindsey Nelson. He used to, when he retired from the Giants, there was Cherokee Bluff up above campus, and that's where he moved when he came back from San Francisco. And I'd get to go talk to Lindsey. Can you imagine?
Wow.
Being able to associate with Lindsey Nelson and John Ward. And then when we moved my mom up here and we moved her into an assisted living facility, George Mooney was in the assisted living facility. And so I had a great relationship with Lindsey and George Mooney and John Ward. I mean, what a history of the Vol Network. Mooney, when he was living in the retirement home, they would do baseball bingo. And so what they would do, they get all the little old ladies out there, and they had the bean bags. You throw the bean bags, and it'd tell you whether you got a single or whatever. And they bring the Bearden High School baseball team over to play against the little old ladies in the rest home. And George Mooney would do the play-by-play of the baseball game, the beanbag baseball game. And the little old ladies kicked Bearden's butt every single – they couldn't be – those little old ladies were in their walkers and stuff. They're motoring down to second base on a double, and Mooney's going crazy. It was one of the greatest things ever. So I've really been blessed to just get a great education, understand the Vol Network, the roots of the Vol Network, because Lindsey started it. He told me all about that. And then George Mooney talked about all those great teams with the General and Bowden Wyatt, and then got to work with John. I've just been really, really blessed.
And last thing – Bob, he had passion, obviously he was passionate about what he did, but he also was passionate about other things outside of the booth, right? He loved being in the yard. He loved golf. I mean, there were other interests.
Yeah. He lived on the first fairway on Fox 10 Country Club, and he had the lot next to his condemned because it had some drainage issues. So he bought that lot at a discount price. So he basically got two lots for the price of one. But he went all over the country looking for rhododendrons and azaleas and exotic flowers and fountains and all kinds of stuff. And, I mean, his yard was on the dogwood trails. And, I mean, it was unbelievable. And so one year they were going to flip-flop the sides. They were going to make that the 10th fairway instead of the first fairway. Well, John didn't like that. And so he kind of out of character started doing door-to-door polling and getting petitions and had town hall meetings to get them to stop it so they wouldn't flip-flop the sides. And it worked. His law degree finally paid off. So I saw him after they turned it down, and I said, John, I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm not good enough to play at Fox Den. I said, but why do you care? You could go out. You could be on number 7. You could walk out your back door and play a round of golf and then come back in. It doesn't matter what hole you're on. He said, no, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. If they flip-flop those sides, that first tee, the 10th tee, that means people are hitting scuffed-up balls in my yard. I don't want those balls in my yard. I want balls that have only been hit one time. I want brand new Pro V1s. I don't want those old beat up balls in my yard. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my.
And so he would have a basket, a wicker basket full of golf balls, Pro V1s that have been hit one time. And you'd go over to see him, and he'd hand you a brown paper bag, and he said, take some golf balls as a party gift. And so you'd get a bag of brand new golf balls, and then you'd leave, and that would be the deal. So he was always doing something. I mean, he was so, as we mentioned, so larger than life when he was on the air. But when he wasn't on the air, he just had a great sense of humor. And some of the best times I had were those Friday nights having dinner with Bill Anderson and John Ward before games, and listening to those guys tell stories and laugh. And it was, a lot of times we travel together. If we're going to Nashville or to Kentucky, we'd all travel. Just drive up there and listen to those stories between those guys going up. It was magic. It was just a lot of fun.
Wow, mic drop. That was a great way to end it. Bob, I know a lot of people have asked you to talk today about this. We really appreciate you joining us. Thanks for doing this.
Well, I appreciate you guys, too. Thanks for calling. Talk to you soon, I hope.
All right, that is Bob Kessling. He is the voice of the Vols, and wow, that was fantastic.
That was good stuff.
We will come back and wrap up the third hour next.